Chapter 7.
Did you have to fool around like that?
Asked Lil.
I thought you were right behind me.
We were, but those people had other ideas. We need to go outside and... Oh. Edric's jaw dropped as he stared past us out the window. Even during my short excursion through the castle, I had noticed differences from the way it was in my time. The furniture was sparse, the people's clothing simpler. However, the biggest difference was outside. Unlike our time when flowers were forbidden on the castle grounds, I saw them blooming everywhere. I recognized the roses climbing the walls and growing in massive hedges, having seen the rose-covered cottages at the old witch's retirement community, but I didn't know the names of most of the rest. Vines dripping with purple blooms covered the castle. Dark blue flowers nodded at the edge of the moat, while small yellow flowers and broad green pads floated on the water. Trees heavy with pink and white blossoms stood like rows of soldiers waiting to be inspected on either side of the road leading away from the drawbridge. Although I didn't know much about such things, it seemed odd that so many plants should bloom at the same time. Why would anyone plant flowers around the castle? Asked Edric. They make it harder to defend. I tapped him on the wing and pointed to the other side of the road where hedges of deep pink roses grew in an intricate maze. That will be perfect, I said, hopping off the ledge. Lil and Edric followed me as I flew to the maze, dodging droning bees and butterflies intoxicated with nectar. Perfect for what? Edric asked. For turning back, of course.
All ready?
Asked Lil.
But we were just starting to have fun.
When we passed the drawbridge, I was shocked to see that vines twined around the chains and threaded through the portcullis. Edric must have seen it too, because his wings faltered, and I heard him mutter to himself. Reaching the maze, we skimmed the rose bushes until I found a secluded niche, invisible even to someone looking down from the higher tower. I settled to the ground and used my usual spell to turn us back into humans. No sooner had I smoothed my gown over my hips and adjusted my hem than I heard voices coming through the maze of shrubs. Edric heard them too and set his hand on Ferdy's hilt, but I shook my head and he took his hand away.
Why does Millie need a new gown, Mother? It isn't her birthday,
someone whined. Startled, Lil slipped into a dense section of the hedge where even I couldn't see her.
I'm sorry, my darling Hazel, a sweet voice replied, but you want her to look her best for your party, don't you? We wouldn't want her to embarrass you in front of your guests.
Really, Mother, said a softer voice, I don't need another gown.
Nonsense, said Hazel. Mother is right. You'll get a new gown, but it won't be nearly as nice as mine. Will it, Mother?
Of course not, dear. You are the birthday girl, after all.
And don't forget, Millie,
said Hazel as they rounded the hedge.
Stay out of my way when... Goodness, who are you?
She asked, spotting us for the first time. Hazel was lovely, but not what I'd expected. She looked like a flower herself, with her porcelain skin, pink cheeks, and delicate features. Her thick blonde hair reminded me of my mother's. Her lips were the same deep pink as the roses, and her eyes a deeper blue than the sky. She didn't look anything like the green witch in the tapestry decorating my chamber at home. The older woman who walked beside Hazel wore a simple gold circlet to secure the veil covering her hair. Shorter than Hazel, she was plump and had worry lines etching her forehead. Her eyes were green, although not as dark as mine, and I could see our family resemblance. However, the face that really surprised me was that of the young girl peeking from behind her shoulder. Except for her dainty, freckled nose and the carrot-red shade of her hair, which was much brighter than my auburn, I might have been looking in a mirror.
I said, who are you?
Hazel repeated. I curtsied and said, Emma.
I wasn't really sure how I should explain my presence, since I'd never intended to meet the royal family. I had hoped to talk to one or two people about the curse and leave.
You must be one of Aunt Frederica's daughters, said Hazel. There are so many of you, it's hard to keep track.
Are you settled in, dear? Asked the Queen, smiling at me kindly.
Not really, I said. I just... The Queen frowned and shook her head.
Don't tell me that my steward didn't assign you to a room. I'm so sorry. With all our guests, we simply don't... I know. Millie, she said, turning to the girl behind her. You have ample space in your chamber. Your cousin can sleep there. I'll have the steward see that a pallet is brought up before supper.
The red-headed girl behind her smiled shyly at me and nodded. The Queen turned to Edric, who'd been staring at Hazel with obvious admiration.
And you are?
Edric blinked and cleared his throat.
I'm Prince Edric, a friend of Emma's.
Hazel smiled at him coyly.
Another prince? How nice. Do you come from very far away?
Farther than you can imagine, he said.
I could have sworn I heard Lil giggling in the bushes behind us, but no one else seemed to notice.
Ah, said Hazel. That explains your unusual clothes. Perhaps one of the other princes could lend you something more becoming. You can share a room with them. We'll have to find a way to fit in one more pallet.
She looked me up and down, her eyes lingering on my gown.
Send a tunic and surcoat for her, mother. That thing she's wearing is most peculiar. One of your ladies-in-waiting should have something that would fit her.
I'm sure we can find her something, the Queen began.
She is tall, though, isn't she?
Hazel said, brushing past me on the path.
And I can't imagine where she got that nose.
We mustn't be unkind to those less fortunate, dear,
I heard the Queen say as she hurried after her daughter. I could feel the heat rushing to my cheeks, and I knew that I was blushing, something I hadn't done in a very long time. When I glanced at Edric, he was staring after Hazel with a dazed look in his eyes.
Don't pay any attention to her, said Millie, patting my shoulder. My sister is like that with everyone.
Your sister? No one had told me that Hazel had a sister, older or younger. It was a shame that so much of our family's history had been lost. Millie sighed.
I just turned 13, so she's only 3 years older than me, but she acts 20 years older. Come with me. I'll show you where you're going to sleep. I'll have one of the pages take Edric to meet the princes.
How many princes are there?
Edric asked.
5, said Millie. That room is going to be crowded.
I glanced around, hoping to see Lil, but she must have still been hiding in the bushes. I resolved to come back and find her as soon as I could. It's awfully kind of you to let me stay in your room, I said, following Millie through the confusing maze.
Oh, I don't mind, she said. I'm surprised they didn't put someone in with me sooner. Mother tends to forget about me, and as for Hazel, well, sometimes I wish she would as well. I shouldn't complain, though. You come from a big family. I suppose it's even worse for you.
Big family?
I stopped, remembering that I was supposed to have a whole gaggle of sisters. If my long-ago relatives wanted to believe that I was one of Aunt Frederica's daughters, I wasn't about to try to change their minds.
The drawbridge is this way,
said Millie, leading us between two banks of heavy-headed roses that looked exactly like all the others we'd passed. We had left the maze and were passing the first of the flowering trees when Millie exclaimed,
Oh, look! There are your sisters now!
Any hope of passing myself off as one of the cousins died the moment I saw them. A cluster of 6 or 7 girls, ranging from a few years older than me to a toddler clinging to her mother's hand, turned to look at us. Like their mother, each one was petite and finely boned. Even the oldest girl was fairly short. Although their mother's hair was dark brown, all of the girls' hair was red, but none of them had my high cheekbones or distinctive nose. I wasn't sure what to do, so I waggled my fingers at them in greeting and hurried past, spurred on by their puzzled expressions. True to her word, Millie called to the first page she saw and had him escort Edric to the prince's chamber. After that, Millie didn't say another word until we reached her room. Closing her door behind us, she plunked herself down on her narrow bed and turned to me with a determined look in her eyes.
"We need to talk," she said,
patting the blanket beside her. I climbed onto the bed.
"If it's about Frederica, don't worry," Millie said. "I understand perfectly. You aren't really one of her daughters, are you? I didn't think you were."
I searched her eyes, hoping she would understand.
"When Hazel said, 'Hazel is wrong more often than she's right, but you'd never get anyone else to admit it.'"
Millie drew her knees up to her chest and hugged them.
"You can tell me the truth. I'm very good at keeping secrets."
I shook my head.
"You wouldn't believe me if I told you." "It doesn't matter. I think I already know. Aunt Frederica isn't your mother, but I bet Uncle Marcus is your father, and he made his wife take you in and raise you as one of her own. She resents it, doesn't she? The look on her face said it all. Don't worry. It happens in the best of families." "I'm right, aren't I?"
Millie said, looking very pleased with herself.
"You're too clever for me,"
I said, delighted that she'd found her own explanation. Millie sighed.
"Not really. It's just that every family has secrets. Some are easier to figure out than others."
"Don't tell me that you have a secret, too." Millie turned her head away. Something was troubling her, but I couldn't blame her if she didn't want to tell me all about it. After all, we'd only just met. I was about to apologize for being nosy when there was a knock on the door and a pair of chambermaids came in carrying a pallet and an armful of clothes. It didn't take them long to arrange everything to their satisfaction. They were leaving when one of them glanced at my shoes and frowned. As the door was closing, I heard her say to her companion,
"Did you see that girl's shoes? They looked like a dog chewed them."
I tucked my feet under me, hoping Millie hadn't heard her. My shoes were scuffed and dirty from tripping in the dungeon, but I didn't think they looked chewed. Certainly none of my father's hounds could have done it. And as for King Grunwald's... When I thought about it, I hadn't seen a single hound since I'd arrived, although they always seemed to be underfoot in my own time.
"Don't your parents allow dogs in the castle?"
I asked. Millie shook her head.
"Not anymore. It's not my parents' idea, though. It's Hazel's. She doesn't like dogs. I suppose she's afraid they'll dig up her precious plants."
"She does have a lot of influence, doesn't she?" I said. I didn't know anyone who could make my father get rid of his favorite hounds.
"Hazel usually gets what she wants. It wasn't always that way, just since she discovered that she could do magic. My parents are afraid of her now, and they do everything they can to make her happy."
I was shocked. The only people in my family who had tried to use magic against a relative had been under the influence of the family curse. The thought that someone might want to do it.
"Has she ever used her magic to hurt anyone?"
"Not so far, but she's always dropping hints that she could if she wanted to. Even the threat of withholding her magic is enough to get people to do what she wants. Before she came into her abilities, the kingdom's crops were failing. Hazel turned all that around. I just wish she'd left it at that."
"Then she hasn't actually done anything to anyone?"
"I wouldn't say that. After she figured out that she could do magic, she experimented all the time, and she wasn't always nice about it. She used to have vines tie me up just for fun.
Sometimes she'd grow prickly plants on my chamber floor during the night so I'd step on them when I woke up in the morning. She doesn't bother me so much since I learned to stay out of her way and let her think she's getting what she wants. But she doesn't always get what she wants, does she? I asked, seeing a hint of defiance and something I couldn't quite name in Millie's eyes.
No,
she said, a secret smile curving her lips.
Not anymore.
Doesn't she use her magic for anything productive besides growing crops? What about protecting the kingdom or helping your parents?
If only she would. Everyone likes to pretend otherwise, but Greater Greensward is in trouble. Werewolves have been raiding the outlying villages, and I overheard my father talking to his men about vampires. What's even worse is that a dragon has moved into a cave near here. Father sent knights after it, but we never saw them again. He finally stopped sending people, although I know he's been hoping one of Hazel's suitors will kill the dragon for us. It's not going to happen, though. All they want to do is eat our food, drink our wine, and flirt with Hazel. Although there is one suitor. What about him?
His name is Prince Garrod. He's very handsome, if you like men who have wavy blonde hair, deep gray eyes, and cleft chins. He's a good hunter. Every day, when the weather is fair, he goes off by himself, yet he never fails to come back with some sort of game. Garrod may be the only one who would stand a chance against the dragon. Prince Fenton is said to be good on the jousting field, but that isn't the same as fighting a dragon. What about your friend, Prince Edric? Is he a good hunter?
Yes, he is. He's gone hunting with my father many times, and their hunts are always successful. But you shouldn't need to send a hunter after your dragon. Isn't there anyone who could take care of it with magic? Millie shook her head.
No one's ever tried. Although it wouldn't be a bad idea, she said, getting a faraway look in her eyes.
So there are werewolves, at least one dragon, and who knows what else in the kingdom. Why are your parents still having the party with all this going on? Millie shrugged.
It's what Hazel wants and what Hazel wants, Hazel gets, we said in unison and grinned at each other.
Millie assumed that I was ashamed of my meager possessions and didn't want to fetch them from among Frederica's belongings, so she lent me what I needed, borrowing what she didn't have from others. Once I'd changed my clothes, I didn't stand out so much, and I began to relax and enjoy myself. That afternoon, Millie showed me around the castle, pointing out her favorite places to hide from her parents and sister. The castle was smaller than in my time, without the entire back section that my great-grandfather had added. I acted as if I'd never been there before, oohing and aahing over each of the innovations she pointed out that seemed so old-fashioned to me. I was amazed when I saw how many flowers had been introduced into the castle, often in inappropriate ways. The larger windows were overgrown with blossoming plants so big they blocked most of the sun, making the castle dark and dismal inside. Climbing the tower stairs, I found the arrow slits filled with blossoms as well, many of which I recognized from their leaves. I'd grown up picking medicinal plants with my Aunt Grisina, but had been forbidden to touch them when they bloomed. Finding sweet woodruff, wild thyme, lovage, and cowslip growing in the niches that archers used to defend the castle seemed wrong to me. I found sunflowers on the battlements, turning their yellow faces as the sun crossed the sky, while melon vines crisscrossed the stone, forcing me to step carefully. Because of Hazel, the castle was more green than gray, pretty rather than practical. When we went to supper that night, Millie was careful to keep me away from my supposed parents, telling me how uncomfortable she was sure I must feel around Frederica. Instead of sitting at the high table with her parents and her aunt and uncle, she led me to a table where other young nobles were taking their places. Hazel saw where we were going and abandoned her seat with her parents, scampering off the dais. Smiling gaily at every guest she passed, Princess Hazel shoved her sister aside, taking her seat on the bench beside one of the princes. The trestle tables were arranged in a U with royalty seated at the closed end, so I could see Millie's parents' faces easily. Although King Grunwald didn't seem to notice, the queen, whose name I'd learned was Angelica, watched her daughters flouting protocol with a resigned look on her face, as if she'd seen it all before. Edric came in a few minutes later, talking to a young nobleman. He spotted me sitting beside Millie and took a seat on my other side after persuading a sandy-haired prince to move over. "How are you getting on?" I asked him as pages served the eel and prawn stew.
"All right. The room is clean, and the princes seem friendly."
"That's Prince Fenton over there," he said, indicating the young man beside Hazel. "He follows the tournament circuit and can't resist bragging." He nodded toward the youth with dark hair.
"And that's Jasper. He seems nice enough."
When Edric pointed out Prince Fenton, I recognized him as the leering monster who'd captured me when I was a bat, threatening to kill me with one hand. He seemed affable sitting with Hazel and the visiting princes, but I couldn't keep from shuddering every time I looked his way. The only other prince who seemed noteworthy was the one Edric had identified as Jasper. He wore his straight, dark brown hair, chin-length, like most men of his time. His eyes crinkled when he smiled, and he had an easy, infectious laugh. Even so, I probably wouldn't have noticed him if Millie hadn't spent most of the meal peeking at him, turning away with a guilty start whenever he glanced in our direction. At 13, Hazel's little sister was a bit too young for marriage, but not too young to think about it.
"Where is that Prince Garrod you mentioned?" I asked Millie, looking down the line of well-dressed nobles for someone fitting his description.
Millie selected a leg of roasted capon from a passing platter and set it on her plate.
"He isn't here. On the days he goes hunting, he doesn't come back until after dark. Prince Garrod is the only one of Hazel's suitors who contributes to the table. I think my parents already favor him because of it."
Maybe Edric should do that, I thought. My mother resented him because he ate so much, but she might not mind his long visits if he provided food on a regular basis. I was serving myself some beets when two pages bumped into each other, nearly dumping their heaped platters on the floor. It reminded me of Derwin's song about what had happened when he had dropped the platter.
"Millie," I said, "do you know a servant named Derwin?" "How do you know Derwin?" she asked. "He's one of our oldest servants. Have you seen him lately?"
she said, twirling a lock of her hair around her finger.
"I guess I haven't seen him since the night he dropped the goose on Father. It was kind of funny. Even Father laughed. The only one who didn't was Hazel. She doesn't have much of a sense of humor."
I heard that she sent Derwin to the Oubliette. Maybe I was interfering, but something had to be done.
"I didn't know that. I hope the poor old man is all right. I'll talk to Father about it. There was no call for Derwin to be treated so."
We were nibbling the final course of cheese and fruit when I overheard some women seated nearby discussing the vicious creature that had attacked them. According to one, a slobbering horror with blazing red eyes had swooped on them, baring its dagger-like fangs. It took me a while to realize that she was talking about me.
"If it hadn't been for Prince Fenton, we might all have been killed," said one young noblewoman, smiling past her friends to where the prince was helping himself to another slab of venison.
The prince looked down at his thumb wrapped in a strip of clean linen.
"Vicious beasts, bats," he said.
I covered my mouth so no one would see me smile, but Jasper must have noticed because he met my eyes and winked. Some of the other princes turned to Fenton and demanded to hear the story. I was worried about Lil, since we hadn't had a chance to make our plans before Edric and I had left her. I just hoped she wasn't too frightened alone in the unfamiliar maze.
"I need some fresh air," I told Millie. "I'm going for a walk in the garden."
A juggler was strolling past the table, and Millie seemed entranced by the balls he kept circling through the air.
Hmm?
She murmured.
Well, then I'd better go with you. We're not allowed to walk alone at night.
But it isn't dark yet, I said, glancing out the window. Millie gathered her skirts and slipped off the bench.
My father's rules. There are too many dangerous beasts in the area. I told you about the werewolves.
I can go with Emma, said Eitrick, swinging his legs across the bench so he could stand.
Then you won't need to go, Millie, I said. Eitrick will keep me safe.
Hazel frowned at me.
Perhaps we should all go, she said.
Gracing him with her sweetest smile, Hazel took Edric's arm and led the way. It was almost as if she thought I'd brought her another suitor. I couldn't help feeling a pang of resentment when Edric bent down to hear what she had to say. I bit my lip and followed them, trying not to glare at Edric and Hazel. I didn't want company. If a group of people went with me, I wouldn't be able to talk to Lil. I would have said something, except everyone was already heading out the door. Only Jasper dawdled behind as if waiting for me. Hazel glanced back. She made Edric wait while she held out her hand to Jasper and said,
"You may also escort me."
Jasper looked my way and shrugged, then linked Hazel's free arm with his. Millie bumped my elbow.
"Look at her," she whispered. "Hazel would have all of them on a tether if she could, and even that probably wouldn't be enough."
The shadows were getting long as we approached the rose hedge maze, and the scent of the flowers hung heavy in the air. Hazel stepped lightly down the path, surrounded by the princes and a few of the giggling young noblewomen. Since Millie trailed after Jasper like a lost puppy, it was easier to get away on my own than I'd expected. All I had to do was dawdle until I was left behind, then take an opposite turning once they were out of sight. The roses were lovely, but after a while they all looked the same to me. I hadn't gone far before I stopped to look around.
"Lil?"
I called softly.
"Where are you, Lil?"
It was a little soon for bats to be out hunting, but mosquitoes came out earlier in the shade of the hedge. I could appreciate a good insect, having lived as a frog for a time, but that didn't mean I wanted to feed them. I was slapping my cheek when Lil fluttered over the top of the hedge and landed on my shoulder.
"Where have you been?"
she asked, straightening her wings.
"I've been waiting here all day. I can't say that I mind, though. They raise some good, juicy bugs in these shrubs."
When I slapped my neck again and studied the smear of blood and the squashed mosquito on my palm, I noticed that my ring was gone from my hand. I must not be the Green Witch in this time. "So you don't mind staying here for a few days?" I said. "Hazel's younger sister is sharing her room with me, but I don't think she'd understand if a bat joined us."
"I'm fine here. Once you get past the leaves and thorns on the outside, some of these shrubs have nice, cool spaces in their middles. Sit still for a minute, and the bugs come right to you. Good place for a nap, too."
"If you're sure you're all right."
"Sure, I'm sure. It's not as nice as a good cave, but a bat can't have everything."
"I'll try to come see you at least once a day. We have to stay until after the party."
"Fine with me," said Lil. "I might take a look around come dark. What's the use of visiting a new time if you can't see the sights?"
"Don't go too far." Lil beat her wings and rose into the air.
"Don't worry about me. I can take care of myself."
After Lil left, I retraced my steps, but I guess I'd made more turns than I'd thought. It all looked the same to me, and I might have gotten lost if Millie hadn't shown up. "I took a wrong turn," I said, gesturing back the way I'd come. Millie gave me a sympathetic smile.
"That's easy to do. We have to go now. They'll be raising the drawbridge soon."
I could hear the voices of the others coming through the maze, but there was something else nagging to get my attention. I concentrated, and then I had it. The faintest hint of a scent. One that I'd hoped I'd never smell again.
"Hurry,"
I told Millie, reaching for her hand. We have to get inside. A woman screamed, or at least it sounded something like a woman. People in the maze shouted, and I heard the sound of running feet. Millie tried to pull away from me.
Someone is hurt. We have to help her.
No one is hurt, I said, pulling her along behind me as I started for the castle. That was a harpy. If there's one, there's a whole flock. They rarely travel alone.
Really?
She said, stopping to look over her shoulder.
I've never seen a harpy.
I tugged on her hand to get her moving again. Believe me, I said, you'd be better off if you never did. I'd seen harpies before. In fact, I still had nightmares about them. Foul-smelling creatures with the bodies of vultures and the heads of women. In my time, they had taken over a small village in Greater Greensward by chasing away the people who lived there. Once a harpy occupied a house, it took a massive effort to make it clean enough for anyone to live in it again. Harpies smell worse than skunks and leave their odor behind long after they've gone. It had taken me 3 days and a lot of magic to chase them away, and then the villagers had still refused to come back. If possible, it was better to keep them out in the first place than to have to clean up their mess afterward. I was pulling Millie onto the drawbridge when the first harpy appeared. Shrieking wordlessly, it swooped down on us. I would have used my magic to turn the creature away, except I didn't want anyone to know that I was a witch. When I threw up my hands to ward it off, a boy dressed like a stable hand shouted and came running with a stout staff. Waving the staff in the air, he forced the screeching harpy higher. We were almost beneath the portcullis when the creature began pelting us with dung. It missed Millie and me, but hit the boy squarely on the back. It would have hit him again if he hadn't kept running. Once we were inside, Millie and I thanked him profusely. After he ran off to the stable, Millie said,
"That boy saved us from a stinky fate. I think he deserves a reward."
Although he looked very different from his ghost, the shape of his nose and the jut of his chin were similar enough that I'd recognized him. It was Hubert.
"I think so, too," I said.
"In fact, I think he deserves a medal." Edric had been with Hazel and her friends when the harpies attacked. According to Hazel, nearly a dozen harpies had pelted them with sticks and clods of dirt. Edric was the only one carrying a sword, and he'd made a real impression with his skill and bravery. I heard all about it after they reached the castle. Hazel's voice was almost as loud as the harpies by the time she joined us. The entire castle was in turmoil as soldiers ran to defend the gates and the battlements, servants rushed to fetch water from the castle well to heat for baths, and everyone else ran around shouting questions that no one seemed able to answer. We found the queen in the great hall, wringing her hands.
"What a time for this to happen," she wailed. "We have a castle full of guests and more on the way."
"Where is father?" Millie asked, trying to get her mother's attention. "I have to see him."
The queen grabbed her daughter by the arm and held on tightly.
"Oh, no, you don't, young lady. You'll just get in the way. You're staying here with me until this is over."
Although I understood how frustrated Millie must feel, her mother's interference helped me. I needed to go somewhere without anyone following me or suspecting that I had gone. Afraid that the queen might try to make me stay as well, I slipped into the milling crowd and headed for the stairs that led to the unfinished tower. The stones were thick with dust, and the door leading to the tower was jammed, but when I finally forced it open, I had the ideal vantage point. Soldiers stationed on the battlements across from where I watched thrust their swords at the harpies, who flew just out of reach, pelting them with dung. Although archers shot one volley after another at the bird women, only a few found their mark. A group of harpies was concentrating on the battlements just above the gate, but there were so many of them that I found it hard to see why until a harpy fell and I spotted the king surrounded by his knights. A sword flashed and another harpy fell, making the rest of the creatures draw back. The knights moved as a group, trying to escort the king to the only completed tower and safety. Although I remembered dyspepsia's warning about not changing the past, I had to interfere. It may not have been my time, but it was my home, and I couldn't stand to see it taken over by harpies. While everyone watched the monstrous creatures, I hid in the tower doorway to recite the spell I had in mind. I knew how persistent harpies could be, so I had the spell cover their return just in case. O ye wind of far-flung places, keep these harpies from this home. Should they force themselves upon us, blow them all from here to Rome. At first, it was a light breeze caressing my cheek and lifting the hair that had come loose from my braid. Within seconds, it was a wind strong enough to blow a man's cap from his head. In less than a minute, I had to fight to get back into the tower room. The harpies flying over the battlements were carried off while I strained to shut the door. From the sound of their screaming, the rest of the harpies soon followed them. When I rejoined the crowd in the great hall, the king and queen were standing near the high table, talking in muted voices. They looked up at the approach of one of their knights. "Your majesties," said the knight, "the harpies have gone."
"But how? Why?" asked the king.
"It was the wind, sire. It carried them away."
"Wind? You're making no sense, man. There is no wind today."
"It started suddenly, sire, and it's already stopped."
"You don't suppose it was magic, do you?" asked Queen Angelica.
The king nodded.
"It must have been."
"Then it had to have been Hazel's doing."
"Where is the girl?" asked the king. "I wish to talk to her."
"She's locked herself in her chamber," said one of the young ladies who had followed the princess into the maze, "and she refuses to come out."
"Then she performed the magic from there," said the king. "I must thank her."
"I don't know what we would have done without that darling girl," the queen gushed.
"Let's go," Millie whispered, coming up behind me. "If I have to listen to any more of this, I'm going to be sick." I followed Millie up the stairs to her chamber. We got ready for bed, and Millie went to say goodnight to her parents. When she came back, she told me that Hazel had kept her door locked, refusing to come out until her parents had assured her that the harpies were gone.
"She'd blocked her windows with climbing roses," said Millie. "Their perfume was so strong it gave everyone else a headache. My father no longer thinks that she was the one who got rid of the harpies."
"Really?" I said, trying to sound surprised. "Then who does he think it was?"
"That's just it," said Millie. "No one knows. Maybe it was one of the princes. We don't know much about them. That's what I wanted to discuss with you. I hate to ask you for a favor since you're a guest, but I need your help."
"What do you need me to do?" I asked.
"Hazel is supposed to announce the name of the suitor she's chosen at the party. When we went for our walk, she was discussing Fenton's tournament wins with him, so she didn't hear the other princes. But I did. They didn't say anything wrong exactly, and I know they were joking, but they said some things that made me wonder why they're asking for her hand. Is there even one among them who loves her? I'd feel better if we could find out what they really want."
"I'll talk to Edric. Since he's sharing a room with the princes, maybe he can learn more about them." Millie sighed.
"Thanks. At least that's a start."
Her bed creaked as she turned over. I lay awake thinking, long after Millie's breathing became soft and even. She was a sweet girl, and we'd taken to each other right away. She was also a relative, although a distant one. If she needed my help, I would try my best. As I lay in bed, wishing I could fall asleep, it occurred to me that there might be something more I could do than just find out what the curse had been after it happened. Maybe I could do something about the curse itself. Maybe I could keep it from being cast. I already knew that Hazel had offended the fairy by failing to give her an everlasting bouquet. It shouldn't be hard to make sure that didn't happen. She'd just have to make more bouquets. Enough to give one to everyone, including every fairy. If I ended the curse before it began, Grandmother and Grissina would never have turned nasty. Grandfather wouldn't have died in the dungeon. Grissina could have married Haywood, and I could marry Eitrick. It sounded like the perfect solution to everyone's problems. I remembered Dyspepsia's warning about the dangers of altering history, but it wasn't hard to convince myself that the kind of change I had in mind couldn't hurt anyone. Believing that I'd just had the best idea yet, I drifted off to sleep, worry-free for the first time in months.